So, welcome everyone to the first installment of the Philly Film Room podcast. I'm Eric Sidewater, and I'm joined here by my co-host, Nick Waters. And with the NFL draft coming up, we thought this no better time to start the podcast because we've both put in a lot of research into some of these draft prospects, specifically looking through the lens of the Eagles and what Howie may do. The first episode, we basically want to talk about what Howie will do with the first pick. So before we get into it, Nick, how would you kind of describe the narrative from what you've heard from like Eagles fans on the radio, potentially online, about what Eagles fans think Howie might do?
You know, I think just with the way that this organization has been built, and what the fans are conditioned to, I think a lot of people believe that we're going to pick an offensive lineman first, whether that's a pure lane replacement or someone that has guard versatility that can then slide to tackle later down the road when Lane does retire. But, you know, I also think people are looking at corner just based on how the season ended last year, and you look at the depth chart going forward, especially 2025 and beyond. I think corner is one of those positions that people are looking at as well. That just kind of fits around with the best player available at the board at the time. And of course, I think, you know, with the departure of Hassan Reddick, looking at edge rushers, and there's some nice ones at the back end of the first round. But once you start to get to round two, that talent drops off pretty quickly. So if there's three positions I think people are really focused on, I think it would be offensive line, corner, and then an edge rusher.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes if you're someone who's like, in the thick of it with the NFL folklore day in, day out, we can lose sight of some of, you know, more of the recreational fans who may not know about any of these prospects or potentially what positions they may be targeting. And I think you're 100% spot on that I keep hearing Howie's definitely going to go O-line. He's always going to address the trenches. And one of the things, I mean, if we just look at track record, they've drafted one offensive lineman in the last 10 drafts. It was at pick 22, the exact same pick they have this year, and it was Andre Dillard, who really never saw the field for them. Now, I'm not going to say that's going to factor into their decision-making this time. I think, and this is something we had discussed prior, is that we really think the board is going to dictate how they pick. Yes, it's true that the Eagles are a process-based team, and they like to follow that process, but I think they're flexible enough to say, okay, if this blue-chip prospect at this position is available, well, we're not going to just blindly pick a lineman over them because we want to address the trenches. Does that sound like a fair characterization?
Yeah, 100%. And I think what Howie's really done is set up the roster in a way where they don't really have a glaring need that they have to go and pick. And that's the best way to draft. You can really let the board fall to you, take who you think's best available, and then build your team through those means. But, you know, outside of right guard, I think there's not a position where they need to go in and find a player in this draft. So, again, whoever it may be, whoever falls to them, you know, I have my opinions on what positions may be a little bit more important, but at the end of the day, especially in the first round, best player available.
Yeah, and I think we heard a report today that said Tyler Steen got that locker right where all the starting offensive linemen's lockers are. Now, I'm not saying that the writing is on the wall. That means he won the job. He had one start last year, and it was shaky. So at this point, it's unclear how much they like him, and there's still a good amount of time between now and the start of the season. But they definitely don't need to panic draft a guard.
Yeah, I don't think they need to panic draft one, but they definitely need to bring in some more competition for that spot. And who knows? No one really talks about it too much, but maybe it's a center that falls to them that's, you know, in the second round or maybe third round, a center falls to them and they leave Juergens at right guard. I don't think that's the plan that they go with, but they have some flexibility at that position, especially because Juergens can play center and guard.
Yes, and they have also brought in Hennessy, who seems like he has a little bit of that interior offensive line versatility. I definitely think Juergens was penciled into the center position ever since he was drafted to be Kelce's successor. He's obviously a better fit for that kind of role. But if you do need him in emergency situations, he could go to right guard. Even Dickerson could slide into center. So I think that the Eagles have always had versatile offensive line depth, which is a benefit. I think another thing that's worth saying is you can find that potentially later in the draft. So even if we all agree that the Eagles definitely need a guard or they definitely need to draft a developmental tackle, that doesn't have to be the first round.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So having said that, where do you think that Howie will go with this first pick? Or what do you think are the positions and players really in play at that pick?
Yeah, so I think we can all agree that the Eagles are pretty much a lock to be a top 10 offense, especially now bringing in Kellen Moore. They expect to run things a little bit more smoothly, less stale offense, less predictable, and all the pieces are in place. At the very minimum, they have a solid offensive line. They got great receiver weapons and now Barkley. And Hurts has proven that when the offense is running smoothly, he's more than good enough to be a solid quarterback. But the defense is way more of a concern. I could easily envision them being a bottom half defense. And it's, of course, you can't rely on the draft to instantly inject talent into your defense and completely, upgrade them at several positions. It's just not viable, especially rookies. Even rookies who end up being good later in their careers might not make that impact early. But if you look at 2025, the edge position and the corner position are extremely thin. So Sweat's contract is up. So you basically have one bona fide starter with Huff. And then you have Brandon Graham will be gone. And we have no idea about Nolan Smith. And we know edge rushers are extremely important in the NFL.
Before we move on to the next topic, I kind of felt like the Eagles might be waiting on what to do with Sweat based on what happens in the first round. Like if they get someone like Latu in the first round, I think Sweat becomes more expendable and maybe he's not back next year. But if they're not able to get a player like that, or maybe they pick someone else that they had higher on their board at that pick, how do you feel about that? Do you think Sweat's more likely to come back next year in that case? Or do you think Sweat's gone next year no matter what and we're looking for a replacement at some point?
Look, if Sweat has a giant year with a ton of sacks, could they re-sign him? Sure. But in that event, they wouldn't even get a good price for him. The way I look at him, I actually don't think he's a great scheme fit. Now, later in future podcasts, we'll get way more into the details of the Fangio scheme. But for a non-trivial percentage of the time, you're going to have those outside rushers drop into small little coverage. Obviously, Sweat is not well suited for that. I think he only did it 20 times last year. He's very stiff-hipped. He doesn't have any awareness. It's totally outside of his skill set. But like I said, if you are a dominant pass rusher, you can overcome that. You fit any scheme. So I don't foresee Sweat being on the team long term. They looked like they were going to move him before he agreed to this new contract structure anyway. So, and there was even rumors that they would move him and Reddick. So I highly doubt he would be back. And then it looks like you'd be very thin at edge, which we probably think is amongst the most important positions on the entire team. So if they drafted edge, I think that is a very practical thing to do. I think it's prophylactic in the sense that you're filling a need for future years. And it would probably be writing on the wall that Sweat's probably not coming back, especially if you're talking about a blue chip player like Latu. That, I think that's kind of my thoughts about edge. And then I kind of wanted to talk about cornerback. So Slay, he looks like maybe you're going to get one more good year out of him. He's going to be, what, 34 next season?
And there's a poison pill in his contract, too. He's not coming back after 2025. He has an option bonus in there, but it's so much money that they're not paying that. No matter how good he plays this year, I don't think they're paying that.
And then on the other side, you have Isaiah Rodgers, who obviously missed a year. He's a little bit of a wild card. You don't know what you're going to get out of him. And he's only signed for 1 year. So if he turns out to be terrific, well, then he's going to get a payday.
Right.
Right. Then you have all this dead money with Slay and Bradbury. So, and then they have all these draft picks and undrafted free agents. So it's a very crowded cornerback room, but there's not any top end talent. So that, which is very problematic. And we've seen quotes recently from Howie that kind of alluded to their process when kind of trying to bring corners on the team. They talked about how they signed all pro corners, traded for corners. And then the guys they drafted, generally day two or beyond, they never materialized until they left the team. Guys like Rasul Douglas, who's now kind of blossoming into his own. So I don't know if that is kind of him hinting at, oh, maybe we're going to address this early. Maybe they're going to make a trade. I think all those possibilities are on the table. But as we were talking about earlier, we think that the board will kind of dictate their strategy here. So we didn't want to bore you with all these, oh, what position, what might Howie take? We actually wanted to dive deep into the prospects to kind of let you guys know about some of these guys they've been watching and how they would fit on the Eagles. Is there anything you'd like to say before we kind of bring up some of these cornerback prospects?
So there is something I just want to touch on briefly before we jump into the corners is, you know, when we talk about this position, a lot of people are going to say Howie never drafts a corner in the first round. They haven't done it in 22 years. I think a lot of that is circumstantial just based on, you know, what has been surrounding the team in those years where we've had first round draft picks. You know, one of the years was Carson Wentz we picked in the first round. We're obviously not picking a corner that year. One of the years we traded for Darius Slay. I don't think they were going to trade for Darius Slay and then pick a corner. And then there was always obviously the years where we had to make up for the Jalen Reagor pick. You know, I think it was pertinent that we fixed other positions like wide receivers. So I think a lot of the Howie's not going to pick this position is a little overstated. And again, very circumstantial. And if you look what happened with the running back market this year and us signing Saquon, that was one of those moves where, oh, Howie will never do it. But, you know, Howie ends up doing it. I think this is a year that really sets up strong for corner just based on who is going to be the best player available. It's very likely that it could be one of these corners. So I think that'd be a good place for us to start today.
Yeah, and just to add to that, there are times where maybe you really want to draft a corner, but there's no one there at the pick that makes sense. So you could like trade down, or you could just stay and pick the guy who's at the top of your board. I think there's a little bit of revisionist history about, oh, this team's great at drafting these positions and this team's terrible at drafting, when a lot of times it's like there's only two or three guys that made any sense at the actual draft position that they ended up in. So just to get into some of the top corners, everyone has their own rankings. But I think for this podcast, it'll be important to talk through the lens of the Eagles, specifically how they would be employed in the Fangio defense. So starting with my number one corner, and we'll definitely have a lot of debate on this podcast about players we like, but my number one corner is Kenyon Mitchell out of Toledo. Now, I always like to start with the negatives, because one of the things about the draft is that most of the players will fizzle out of the league and never be seen from again. I think, especially in this pre-draft process, a lot of people get excited by all the highlights, the potential of what they could be, that, oh, that problem that this player has is coachable. But then if you go back and you look at all the draft boards, it's just names upon names of guys that you've never heard from again. So that's why I tend to be more of a process of elimination guy, where I'm looking at a prospect and I'm saying, okay, here's all the negatives, but do the positives outshine that? How easily fixable are the negatives? And so let's get into Kenyon Mitchell. He played in a really bad conference, the MAC. If you look at the college football conference rankings, this is 9 out of 10 for the Division I. He was the best player in the entire conference. There's definitely a track record of players from bad conferences succeeding in the NFL. Now, this guy is extremely sturdy frame. He's got good height. I believe he's about 6 foot, just over 200 pounds. He has blazing speed. He ran like a 4.3 and change 40. And he's not one of these guys where he just tested well. His athleticism showed up on tape. He was flying all around the field. He can jump up and swat balls. He can come flying in and make tackles. He's got amazing recovery speed. But some of the few knocks on him that I saw was he'll let wide receivers get in his blind spot. He'll stumble a lot when he changes direction. And he has an over-reliance on his recovery speed. So when you're going up against receivers in the MAC, you probably can always recover no matter how much they burn you. That's going to be a little bit more challenging in the NFL. But all those weaknesses that I just outlined, to me, are very fixable. Some weaknesses are less fixable than others. But when you are a really toolsy corner who shows a knack for the position, you're built well like that, and then your tape's good, to me, these are all signs that this guy's definitely going to translate to the NFL.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, just to touch on some of the points that you talked about, he did play in the MAC. Obviously, now that's, like you said, it's not one of the best conferences out there. But he did what a good player should do against that competition, and he absolutely dominated them. So, yes, that is a knock on him that he didn't play. We didn't get to see him against better competition. But if he is a truly great player, he did what a truly great player is supposed to do. And I think that really checks out even when you look at the numbers. Obviously, you talked about the film, but when you translate it and look at the numbers, you know, my model for cornerback production, just looking at the final year of corners' careers and looking back at the past five draft classes, in 2023, Mitchell's season ranked in the 87th percentile over the past five classes. In 2022, that ranked in the 96th percentile. So this is a guy who really has showed on tape, but it also stands out in the analytics as well. But like you said, he did play in a smaller conference. He does have some of the issues like letting receivers get into his blind spot. There's times, especially late in his backpedal, where he'll get on his heels. It's a little tougher for him to transition. And on top of that, I don't think he's the most fluid cornerback in the class, but he has such good long speed and burst that it can kind of make up for that. But it's by no means bad, but I wouldn't say that he's the most fluid mover in the group.
So just going to the analytical profile, you mentioned those very high percentile rankings. What are some of the things that go into those metrics?
Yeah, so this is something that I've kind of put together just looking at things like their yards per target allowed, their completion percentage allowed. You know, a lot of that shows up in like their passer rating allowed and things like that. But I've taken a little bit of a step further, and I kind of weight this stuff usually by their average depth of target, because that can really change numbers and it can really inflate or deflate the value of some of these numbers. Regardless, over that time, Quinion really stood out, and you see that in the film. And that's the most important thing, is it's taking the analytics, but also seeing, does it match with the tape? Because sometimes you'll see these guys and it doesn't match the tape at all. And it's kind of more circumstantial, where it's like the quarterback, he got an forced incompletion because the quarterback put the ball behind the player. And he's really kind of getting lucky on some of the stuff, or he's not playing good competition. But again, Mitchell popped. I think this is a strong indication, combined with his athletic testing, combined with the fact that he went to the Senior Bowl and really held his own against a good competition. I think it really bodes well for him. And to me, I agree with you. I think Quinion is the top corner in the class. And it really comes down to, he's just got that little bit extra burst over the rest of the guys towards the top. that can help them separate and split the hairs there.
Yeah, and I think when it comes to all of these metrics and the testing numbers, the interviews, all that's doing is adding context to what you see on film. And I don't think there's anyone out there who says, I've watched every single play of every single player. So if you can kind of fill in with a little bit more data, so, you know, you're not trying to brute force every single evaluation, it kind of, like you're saying, it just gives you a little bit better insight into how does this player project. And when you look at some of these predictive metrics where you're kind of, you're not just looking at box score, you're pulling out some of the noisy stats, that kind of has a little bit more signal in it than some of the typical stats. So I think all these things are just tools in the toolbox to help your evaluation. I don't think any reliable evaluator is relying on one sole piece of information. I think that's when you get into dicey territory. And I just wanted to talk about Mitchell, because we talked about, what we see on film. Just add a little context to that. He was playing, and maybe you have the numbers on this, he was playing predominantly in off coverage. So they would kind of give up to some degree these underneath routes, and then Mitchell has this world-class break on the ball ability, the stop-start ability to break on the ball when the pass comes out, and then by the time it arrives, he's there to kind of jar it away or make an immediate tackle. I don't know if you have any stats about how frequently he was playing in off coverage, but that's kind of what you saw on film predominantly.
Yeah, 100%. Let me pull up the numbers real quick, because he did play in off coverage quite a bit. So Quinyon Mitchell actually had the second lowest press rate in the past 5 years. So that's definitely not part of his game, although that's something that he did show at the Senior Bowl, and he had some success with it. When you go back and look at, you know, the replays of some of those clips, his footwork was kind of all over the place. It's definitely not a fine-tuned, polished thing, but he has the tools to play press. And I actually think he might be better playing press than he is playing off, just because of some of the you know, hip fluidity stuff we talked about earlier. But I think something that he needs to add to his game, but I don't think it's going to be a big issue. No, I think it's something that will be a strength of his over the years.
Yeah, and when you look at Toledo, the corner opposite him actually played press fairly often. So
a very high rate, a pretty high rate. So it was definitely a player decision, not a coach decision.
Yeah, none of us have a crystal ball, but I think the defensive coordinator, I know I have the best player in the conference. If I'm putting him in press and completely smothering this receiver, they might never look that way. Versus if I put him in off coverage, they might entice them to throw over there sometimes, and then maybe he can like make an interception or a big play or something like that. I'm not saying that's the case, speculating on that. But
and they almost look like they wanted teams to do that, because he didn't have safety help a lot. That safety was playing in the box a lot of the times, and it didn't really matter. I mean, he was able to cover so much space.
Yeah, and if you're telling me he may be even better suited for press in the future, kind of given his physical tools, that's a potentially elite-level cornerback, even at the NFL level. So to me, his upside is extremely high. You hear reports, and you see it on film, of high effort. This is not a given with every single prospect. You know the eyes are going to be on you if you're the best player in your conference. So, you know, it's not like you have much of a choice. But it's something I always like to see, a high level of competitiveness. So, and we mentioned some of his warts are very fixable. So to me, this guy's a slam dunk corner. Now, let's talk about draft stock a little bit. The chances of him dropping to 22 are almost zero. So the Eagles would have to trade up. Can they get all the way up to 12 where the Broncos are, if the Broncos want to trade down, because 12 is too rich to take a QB like Bo Nix? That's a possibility. Could they trade up to the Colts at 15? If they potentially need to fill more holes and want to pick up perhaps like an extra second pick or a future second pick. That's also a possibility. So yeah, we're not suggesting in any way, shape, or form that he'll be available at 22. But if the Eagles determine that this is the guy that they love, he's a perfect scheme fit, graded top of their boards, and they can get him in a small trade up, I think it's in the cards.
Yeah, 100%. If he gets to around 15, I think we're going to see Howie on the phones. I think he would move up for this player. You know, we started this conversation saying Howie's never picked a first-round corner, or they haven't picked one in 22 years, and this could be a year where they actually trade up for a first-round corner. So, but do you think, is there any other corners in that range where you think would be worth trading up for? Or who is even your second corner that you would get?
So I do not think there is another corner worth trading up for. I think there's kind of three other round one corners who could make sense to draft if they fell to 22. And that's Nate Wiggins, Terrion Arnold, and Cooper DeJean. Now, I think the name kind of with the most clout here is Cooper DeJean. So even though he's not my second-ranked corner, I'd like to talk about him a little bit. So DeJean, one of the things about him, thing you'll always hear about him is he's extremely versatile. He's a chess piece. And one of the things about the Fangio scheme is that he tends to utilize players who have a little bit of positional flexibility. Players who can play deep safety, they can rotate down and play in the box, they can play in the slot, potentially even play outside at times. So I think one of the things about DeJean is he is a jack of all trades, but he's potentially a master of none. There wasn't any traits outside of, like, potentially you could say ball skills that really stood out to me. Now, I'm be very curious to hear where you are out, where you're at in DeJean. People talk about him as a safety because he's physical and can make tackles, but I didn't see him as a guy who was flying in towards the line of scrimmage and run fits and making like booming hits. I saw him in almost all facets of the game as a more conservative corner where he was allowing people to come underneath. If there's a guy running out in his direction, he won't give way with the guy trying to block him. He'll kind of hold his ground. And then once the running back approaches, he'll try to shed and make the tackle. But he's not one of these guys, you'll see, like a Sidney Brown, who's coming to try to make the tackle behind the line of scrimmage. I didn't see that out of him. But if you're looking for like a safe, reliable pick with some positional versatility, I think he kind of checks those boxes. So curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. You mentioned the word safe. I think that's definitely what he is. I think he's a safe pick. I think because he can do so much, there's always going to be a role for him. And, you know, there is value in that. And especially with the way football is, there's injuries all the time. If you need a guy that can be able to slide into another position, like when we had Chauncey Gardner-Johnson the year that we went to the Super Bowl, he slid from safety down to the nickel position in that playoff run. That was huge. You know, having a guy like that on your team really provides a lot of value. And like you said, I think he's safe. Now, in terms of what you were talking about, that he's not going to fly down and he's probably not going to be a big hitter or looking to create those negatives like Sidney Brown is, I think there's multiple ways to skin a cat. You know, not every good safety has always been a guy like Sidney Brown. I think there's different ways to get it done. But again, I think that positional versatility is his strength and is what is best. I think he can succeed at outside corner. I don't know if he's ever going to be a top 10, you know, go cover the best guy on the other team type of corner. I think he's more of a zone corner where he can read the quarterback, read the route patterns, and then play off of that. And he showed a really high level of that in college, and it turned into a lot of interceptions. And when he gets the ball in his hands, he's always a threat to take it to the house. So you have value in that. But again, I don't know if he is a guy that's going to go and you're not going to ask him to cover Justin Jefferson one-on-one all game long. He's just not, he's not shifty enough. He doesn't have that change of direction ability to keep up with some of those shiftier guys. Now, you know, bigger bodied matchups, I think he can really excel with those guys. He's got great linear speed, so he can run with those guys down the field as well. But I don't necessarily see him as a man cover corner. And Iowa, they played a ton of cover three. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but in the Power Five last year, I think they were top five in cover three, and I think they were bottom five in man coverage. So he's not been a guy that's been asked to play a lot of man coverage. It's a lot of, hey, stay deeper than the deepest, widest than the wider than the widest. Don't let guys get behind you. And that resulted in a lot of lower average depth of targets. His yards allowed per attempt or per target was fairly low as well. But I think a lot of that played into the fact that he was just playing a lot of deep coverage. Make sure you don't get beat deep. Teams were throwing a lot of curls, a lot of hitches underneath them. Just to, you know, keep in theme with what I talked about with Mitchell. Again, DeJean's still a very good player. His 2023 season, he ranked in the 86th percentile production profile. So again, we're not talking about a guy that's not a very good player. Again, he's versatile. He pops analytically as well, and he has a good athletic profile. So again, I think this is a safe pick.
Yeah, and just a little bit of information about his injury. I believe what I heard was he was practicing with the offense at Iowa, and it was a non-contact injury, and his fibula just like snapped in half. I'm not suggesting this is indicative of him being injury prone or anything, but that is kind of a crazy injury. I definitely agree with you about some of the lateral agility questions. If I went back to the 2022 tape, because I always like to look at what did people look like against elite competition. We kind of glossed over this with Kenyon Mitchell. They did play Ohio State. And he did give up a touchdown to Marvin Harrison, but throughout
that
game...
That was some tight... Even that play, though, that was like good on good. Sometimes your best just beats our best. I mean, that was blanket coverage.
Absolutely. He was very tight coverage throughout the entire game. So even though if you just look at the box score and never watch the game, you might be like, oh, he got cooked. But watching the film, he looked really good. Now, on the flip side, Cooper DeJean did not look good against Ohio State in 2022, in my opinion. He definitely looked outclassed. Now, you could make an argument that he played better in 2023. He didn't have a full schedule, and he didn't play that much elite competition. So there's some question marks there, but I think we're kind of on the same page that he's a safer pick with positional versatility. To speak to the ball production, what I saw was a lot of times it was like weak fluttering passes from bad QBs that kind of hung in the air, and then he would just come flying up and like make a pick six. How translatable is that to NFL? I'm not sure. But what I can say is if he's in position, he'll catch the ball, right? But do I think he's going to be a guy who's getting like 3, 4, 5 interceptions every year? Absolutely not.
Yeah, and to speak to that too, interceptions can be a little fluky. He definitely had a few plays where he read the drop of the quarterback, you know, three-step drop, read the angle of their shoulders, pretty much ran the route for the receiver without even looking at the receiver, went up and got the interception. A couple of those kind of plays on tape. So that's great to see. But again, interceptions can be a little fluky, and I agree with you. There's a few plays where like the pass was thrown behind the receiver, way behind the receiver, and actually DeJean had gotten beat on the route, but because he was behind and the quarterback threw it behind, it ended up right in his hands and he took it to the house for a touchdown. There's some plays like that happen sometimes though, you know, but what I think really speaks to it is that he had one of the lower forced incompletion rates last season. He doesn't actually make a ton of plays on the ball. Again, part of that is his conservative nature of playing cover three. He's playing deeper than the deepest, wider than the widest. Don't give up big plays. And he didn't give up a lot of big plays, but he also didn't make a ton of big plays as well. So there's also that to factor in.
Yeah, like if you watch Kenyon Mitchell, he's breaking up passes kind of, you know, through guys' bodies, swiping the ball out of their hands. You'll see a lot of that. And like you're saying, DeJean was pretty much resigning to that 8 to 10 yard curl route. Here, you can have it. And this is something I noticed as a theme across a lot of college football defenses, is they're fine with the death by a thousand cuts because college players will make terrible passes. They'll fumble the ball. They'll just, there's a million ways they can
run the wrong route. Yeah.
This is something I saw out of Michigan a lot, is that they'll throw in a little wrinkle with their defense where all of a sudden they'll like change up the responsibilities of the slot corner. And then the quarterback thinks they have this easy underneath route on the outside. And before you know it, boom, the slot corner is just breaking on the ball and has an interception. So there is a little bit of that bait and switch as well. And Iowa had a good defense. When I was watching Iowa's defense, to be honest with you, DeJean did not pop off the film for me. He was kind of just another guy out there, but he did his job well. And so if you have a high football IQ guy who's reliable with positional versatility, willing and capable tackler, you know, that's still a guy worth having on your team.
100%. I think it really just comes down to, is this a first round guy? You know, because in first round, you want to knock it out of the park. You want to get a guy that you think can become a Pro Bowl, all pro type player. Do you feel DeJean can become that? And there's also the flip side that sometimes you're just trying to hit a double in the first round. Don't screw up your first round pick. You know, I think DeJean perfectly fits into that. I guess it's really your philosophy and what's available as well.
One of the things that was noticeable to me for Eagles defense last year was the lack of playmakers. So, yeah, some people say, look at his punt returns, look at his pick sixes. But kind of as we alluded to, those weren't some things that necessarily translated or project to translate to the NFL. So in that sense, no, I don't really view him as a big playmaker. Now, if it turns out that this guy has the best study habits in the world, and it has an incredible football IQ and is working on his lateral agility every day, is it possible he could materialize into this game changer? Sure. But that still remains to be seen.
Right. So right. Who's next on your list?
So
we got anyone that you think is more of a playmaker?
I feel like you have someone on your mind. So why don't we talk about Terrion Arnold? Because a lot of people, this guy is their first-ranked corner. Obviously, as opposed to playing in the MAC, he played in the SEC. Now, even going into this year and throughout the year, if you talk to Alabama fans, they talked about Kool-Aid as their number one shutdown corner. And Arnold, he's a nice up-and-comer. I like him on the other side. He's a great number two. And then kind of as the pre-draft process kind of started happening, the narrative seemed to shift of like, Arnold's the guy, because people are talking about Kool-Aid is an unwilling, you know, tackler. His long speed is questionable. He's got this Lisfranc injury. So there's all these red flags about Kool-Aid. Now people are like, Arnold's the guy. And you talked about ball production and potentially game-changing plays. Well, he had that. He had a million pass breakups. He had a ton of interceptions. So if that's the kind of guy you're looking for, I think that hit translates a little bit better than someone like DeJean. Now, I do have knocks on Arnold. I don't know if you want to talk about him a little before I get into some of his knocks.
I think we actually probably view Arnold pretty similarly. You know, he does make a lot of plays on the ball. He's gotten a lot of love through this pre-draft process. But I think it takes some projection with him. I don't think he is this polished, top-of-the-line guy that everyone thinks he is right now. And part of it is he switched from safety to corner. He's only played corner 2 years. It's a hard position to play, and usually you don't see the transition go from safety to corner. Usually it's corner to safety. But you can see a lot of that in his game. I think there's a lot of refinement needed in his technique, especially when you look on the other side of the field and see his teammate and Kool-Aid McKinstry, who just, you know, he throws a lot of teach tape out there. To add to that, he gives up a lot of catches and he gives up a lot of yards. And his production profile was in the 63rd percentile. There's not a lot of hits and the chart when you look at players over the past 5 years in that range. He does have the ball production, but the best corners are sticky in their coverage down in to down out. And Arnold's just not at that point yet. I think he has a lot of the traits that you would like to see, that you would want to see out of a corner. He's extremely fluid. He can turn and run with the best of them. He doesn't have the best long speed, but again, that fluidity that he has really helps him transition and move with these players throughout the route phase. And he's extremely physical as well. He will come up and he can play inside and outside. He'll come up against the run. He'll take on blocks with physicality. You know, so he has a lot of the stuff that you want, but it's just getting that polish, getting that consistency at the position that you'd really, it takes a little bit of projecting.
Yeah, and a lot of these off-zone schemes, that especially what you'll see with the Eagles, they prioritize corners who, because they're inviting all these passes to like the flat areas, and they're prioritizing corners who will come up and make those tackles. And Arnold fits the bill really well for as far as that goes. I'd rank him as the best tackling corner in the draft. Now, if you look at just his missed tackle percentage, it doesn't look good, but I saw those missed tackles and there was nothing that was worrisome. It was him just trying to make plays. Sometimes he didn't have good angles. It's not like he missed a tackle and a guy ran for a touchdown or anything like that. On a down-to-down basis, he was really good. He was really good in tackling in open space. I remember there was a play against Texas where Xavier Worthy could have had a touchdown on an end around, and Arnold just shed a block and made a tackle. So I think in those kind of situations, he's great. You mentioned inside-outside versatility. The thing about Arnold is he might actually project better as a nickel. Now, you never want to take a guy super high who's like relegated to the nickel. Now, I've said many times that the nickel corner is more important now than it's ever been. And you look at a guy like McDuffie, who he was drafted to be an outside corner for the Chiefs, but then he moved inside and was better there and then contributed to them winning the Super Bowl. And now you have all these amazing wide receivers taking a considerable amount of their snaps out of the slot. So I'm not going to pretend that having a good nickel corner is not important. But I actually do think his best work could be done there because they're not as reliant on the long speed. I think he ran in the 4.5s. And he's a little bit smaller frame as well. So if say you're going up against a guy like Nico Collins, who's 6'3 and has these giant strides and eats up turf, that's going to be a really tough matchup. I want to talk about scheme fit as well. So from what I saw, and perhaps you have stats that corroborate this or actually disagree with me, is I saw Arnold well-suited for press man because of his physical nature. You talked about his fluidity, and at the catch point, he can be physical and knock the ball out. And then sometimes in off zone, it looked like he was a little late to like flip his hips. At times he would take eye candy. For example, they would do like a fake screen and then he'd let someone get behind him or bite on a double move, things of that nature. So if you're talking about how would he translate into a Fangio defense, there's definitely some more question marks there.
Yeah, I agreed. And I think a lot of that goes back into the, you know, he just hasn't played a lot, especially when you're young corner and you're a very good athlete, you can kind of rely on, hey, just go and cover this guy, run with him. But it takes a lot of thinking, it takes a lot of reps, it takes a lot of seeing those plays from off coverage to kind of recognize those patterns, know where the quarterbacks are going with the ball or what receivers are trying to do. And so I don't think he has anything physically that would prevent him from being better and off coverage. I just think that if people are expecting him to be one of the better corners in the league year one, I just don't think that's going to be the case. I think there's going to be some growing pains with him. And to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if Kool-Aid has a better rookie year when it's all said and done. He's just a more polished player at this moment. And depending on where these guys go, especially with scheme fits, That could play a huge factor too. But yeah, I think Arnold can play off coverage. It's just going to take a little bit of time until he becomes the player that we expect of someone drafted in the first round.
Yeah, and this is something we'll talk about more extensively as we get into the scheme discussion, is that not all zone coverage is created equally. There's the traditional zone coverage that had existed in the NFL for decades was spot drop, where you're covering a portion of the field and you have eyes on the quarterback. But what you see a lot more out of Fangio style zone is that they're reading the wide receiver routes and they're determining who they're going to cover based off those routes, those route combinations. So there'll be times where once someone comes in their zone, it morphs into a man coverage. If the receiver goes here, then they're passing the player off. There's a little bit more like that kind of basketball style flexibility in the zone than people would traditionally think about it.
Yeah, and it takes time to get all that stuff down and then also go out and do the actual coverage part. You know, I think sometimes it's just the little nuances of playing off coverage versus playing press that I think he just needs to get better at. And that comes with time and it comes with practice. So just gotta understand what you're getting with him when you draft him day one.
And I think with all those things said, he's not worth a trade up. If he's there at 22, it looks like it's good value. So I would not be upset if Arnold is the pick at 22. How about for you?
100%. Again, just because of not being a day one ready. I wouldn't say day one ready, but day one ready for a player that you're giving up extra assets to go and get. I just don't think it's worth it at that point in time. And he would come into the Eagles in a very good situation where they don't necessarily need him to start right away. You know, they have talent. You know, they might not have a superstar right now at corner, but they have enough pieces where he might not start right away, or he could fill in where I think we both think he's best at and play the nickel role. But I do think he would be worth the pick at 22. But like you said, I wouldn't trade up for him.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So there's one other guy that's kind of projected to go in the first round that we should talk about, because this guy could realistically be on the board and a guy that the Eagles are interested in. It's Nate Wiggins. So real quick, this guy played at Clemson. So not the greatest competition in the ACC, but definitely faced some good wide receivers, and he fared really well in those matchups. Everyone knows about his 40 time. I think it was in the high 4.2s, but he also got a hip flexor injury while running it, which is kind of comical. And the other thing that people always talk about is his frame. I think he weighed in at around 173 pounds. Now, recent reports is that he put on 10 pounds for his pro day. So I think a lot of times people say, oh, yeah, they get in the NFL, they can just put on weight. But then for some players, it never happens. But some guys can do it. So if those reports are verifiable and he did put on 10 pounds for the pro day, to me, that's highly encouraging. The other thing is he showed many reps of playing physically. This isn't a guy who's just getting bodied every snap because of his slender frame. So that kind of mitigates some of the concerns about the frame. All things being equal, if he was 200 pounds, would I like him better? Of course. But when you have that 4.2 speed, maybe you have to make a trade-off for a little more slender frame.
Yeah, and I think he probably put some real weight. I mean, he weighed in at the pro day. I'm looking right here, 182. So he put on 9 pounds from the combine. I mean, I think he definitely slimmed down for the combine to try and hit a very low time. And I mean, once you put that 4.2 on the card, you know, that's always going to be an etched in people's memories. It doesn't matter if you go and put on that weight again. What they're going to be looking at in the draft room is, hey, we got this guy that ran a 4.2. And so I think he did try to slim down for that. But like you said, I was surprised with his frame that he wasn't just getting big boyed out there. You know, he actually played with a little more physicality than you would expect with someone with his frame, and he played against some of the bigger receivers in this class. He went against Keon Coleman. He went against Johnny Wilson, and he held his own, more than held his own in those matchups. I would say he won those matchups for the most part. To me, he's a guy, I think everyone looks at the long speed, but that's not even what I like the most about him. He's just so smooth and fluid in his transitions that he can easily change directions with guys. There's no hesitation. There's no having to gather himself. He can flip his hips in 180 degrees in one step. And you don't see a lot of guys that can do that. And that helps him when he's in off coverage and a guy crosses his face, or it helps him when he's in press and he needs to shuffle, then turn and run with a guy down the field. He's just calm in those situations. He doesn't panic. And a lot of times I think he could actually be a little bit better. Like when he flips his hips to run with someone, a lot of times he'll get his eyes back to the ball and then lose his man late. I think if he can do a little bit better with eye discipline, flip the hips, run with the guy, get reconnected, and then look back for the ball, he'll make even more plays. But I saw, you know, there's just some little things with his game that I think he needs to clean up to really unlock his full potential. But when you're looking and at these guys, like, those are things you can work on. Like, you can work on eye discipline. You can't teach a lot of guys that are his height to be as loose as he is. And that really, really, I mean, that's just, to me, I think he has elite level fluidity and hip flip that you just don't find from a lot of players, and especially one that runs a 4.28.
Absolutely. And he has great mirroring ability. So at there are times that he was like running the route for the receiver. So either that's going to completely dissuade the quarterback from throwing in that direction, or if they do, he's in an easy position to swat it away. One of the weird idiosyncrasies I saw with his game, and I don't know if they're coached this way, is he would kind of do this very, he would stand up tall like the Nutcracker and then just backpedal it, like directly backwards. And it's funny when it's paired with that incredible hip fluidity and long speed, because for the early part of the route, it's like, what is this guy doing? And then all of a sudden he's like springing into action. It's definitely something that's easily coachable. Maybe that's something they even wanted to do. I don't know. It to me, it just looked a little bizarre on film. I didn't know if you had any thoughts about that.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the things. When I released a video about who I thought was the best cover corner in this class, just based on covering, I thought it was Wiggins. And one of the things I noted was that he does have an unusually high back pedal, whether it's an actual pedal or sometimes it's a little bit of a side shuffle. He does play high a lot. And I thought I would see more instances where it would kind of, he'd be off balance on his break where, you know, the lower body's going forward, but his head's a little bit having to catch up because he's off balance. But it didn't happen all that often. There was a few reps where it happened, but he'll definitely be better and quicker in his transitions by getting his pad level down and playing with a lower center of gravity, you know, getting his nose over his toes. But again, I think that's stuff you can work on. But listen, he was one of the better corners in college while having that technique. He didn't have to really be a little bit better with his technique because he could get away with it. He was just so much better than pretty much everyone he went against. And just to keep the theme with what we talked about, to touch on his production profile, he was in the 88th percentile. And he gets compared to Forbes a lot. Forbes was 83rd percentile. So he was a little bit better than Forbes. I think Forbes was boosted a little bit because he got a lot of kind of gifted interceptions. But Wiggins did rank better in the profile, because I know that a lot of people want to talk about him and Forbes.
It's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback, but I did not like Forbes at all coming out. And he still might be 165 pounds. Wiggins is now at 180 plus. So that's moving in the right direction. Forbes will definitely be better than he was last year. I don't know how it could get worse, but it looked rough. The other thing is, even let's say that high pad level doesn't get fixed, that 4.28 speed is elite even at the NFL level. So that's going to carry him a long way. And he is a natural cover corner. It's easy to get roped into some of these comparisons because guys like have similar frames, or in this case played at the same college. But I see a lot of what makes AJ Terrell good as what could make Nate Wiggins good in the NFL. Now, I think Terrell's up to a playing weight of like 195, so Wiggins has some time to go there. But he's not a guy who's like using a lot of physicality to jostle receivers off of their route path or anything like this. It's more like extreme fluidity, mirroring skills, and then really high-end athleticism and like long speed that's making him a great cover corner. I see that being the case for Wiggins. Didn't know if you had any thoughts on that comparison.
No, 100%. That's a great comparison. And I mean, you don't have to win with physicality at press. If you can play with good feet, that's the most important thing, whether you're physical in press or you're playing more of a soft press. You have to be good with your feet or you're going to be reaching all the time. You're going to be off balance. He's so patient with his declaring his hips. It's hard to find reps where he just prematurely opens the gate and lets a receiver run free down the field. He is so calm, so patient with his feet. He's really good at mirroring. And I think a lot of that comes to his trust and his long speed that, hey, if a guy does hit me with a speed release right off the line and maybe I'm a step behind, I have the speed to recover. So I think he knows his game. And he plays into his game, and it really kind of maximizes who he is as a player. And again, I think that's part of the reason he's going to be talked about as a late round pick, is because of the fact that he's not a fully complete corner and that he's going to be at a disadvantage against guys like DK Metcalf and AJ Brown. It's not saying he can't beat them in certain matchups, but you know, there's certain routes where they're going to be able to shield him away, or if they're going to be jostling for a ball down the sideline, Wiggins probably isn't going to be squeezing them to the sideline as well as some bigger, more physical corners can. That's just probably a reason why he is going to be in that area for the Eagles. But that's not to say he still can't be a really good Pro Bowl level player. I think he absolutely can be. You just got to know what you're getting.
And he's a true boundary corner, right? This guy, you can line up on the outside against anyone and feel pretty good about it. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, 100%. And passing downs, he can play inside as well. Just he can move so easily. He's a guy that could go inside if, you know, you got your best receivers playing inside on third down. He's not a guy I'm going to put there extensively because, you know, physicality is definitely not something that's he's known for. He's not someone that's going to mix it up in the run game. He's not a guy that's trying to get off blocks very often or with much gusto. But in third down situations, he has the ability to play inside as well. He's a great cover corner, all-around cover corner. And I personally would be thrilled if the Eagles went and got him.
Yeah, I think we did a great job of kind of covering the first round corners. And before the draft, we are going to talk about the offensive linemen, because even though we kind of said it's no lock that the Eagles are going to go that way, it's definitely a strong possibility. And if you look at the Vegas odds, offensive line is way up there. So that's going to be our next episode before the draft. And we're looking forward to doing that.